is brought to you by Head Start Basketball.
Hey, hoop heads. Wanted to take a minute to shout out our partners and friends at Dr. Dish Basketball. Their Dr. Dish shooting machines are undoubtedly the most advanced and user-friendly machines on the market, and they truly accelerate skill development faster than ever. Learn more at drdishbasketball.com and follow their incredible content at Dr. Dish B-Ball on Twitter, Instagram, Facebook, and YouTube. Mention the Hoopheads podcast and save an extra $300 on the Dr. Dish Rebel, All-Star, and CT models. Also, make sure to check out the new Dr. Dish home machine. Visit drdishbasketball.com for details. That's a great deal, Hoopheads. Get your Dr. Dish shooting machine today.
Hi, this is Coach Jay Smith from the University of Michigan, and you're listening to the Hoopheads podcast.
Prepare like the pros with the all-new Fast Draw and Fast Scout. Fast Draw has been the number one play diagramming software for coaches for years. You'll quickly see why Fast Model Sports has the most compelling and intuitive basketball software out there. For a limited time, Fast Model is offering new subscribers 10% off Fast Draw and Fast Scout. Just use the code SAVE10 at checkout to grab your discount, and you'll be on your way to more efficient game prep and improved communication with your team. Fast Model also has new coaching content every week on its blog, plus play and drill diagrams on its play bank. Check out the links in the show notes for more. Fast Model Sports is the best in basketball.
Coaches, do you have a point guard or leader you're going to be counting on next season to run the show for you? Don't leave next season to chance. Thousands of coaches send their players to a point guard college camp each summer to learn to think the game, lead a team, and run the show. Your players will be smarter, better leaders, and better equipped to foster a championship culture next season in practice and in your locker room. I've seen firsthand how PGC camps have had a huge impact on players and coaches that I know, both on and off the court. You can go to pgcbasketball.com to find a 5-day, 4-night camp near you. That's pgcbasketball.com. Hello and welcome to the Hoopheads podcast. It's Mike Klintzing here with my co-host Jason Sunkel, and we are jumping on late.
It's all my fault.
Yeah, I wouldn't go that far. Let's just say it is actually now Wednesday morning, so you will be hearing this on the same day we were recording, which doesn't always happen.
Yeah, that's true. But listen, the one positive is that this game, I mean, I probably would be up, to be honest with you, Mike, I would be up anyways because this game's been pretty good tonight. So, I guess pretty good is kind of up to the eye of the beholder because it's not been very good basketball. But at least the game's close. And, by the end of our recording, maybe we'll have an idea who's going to win the game or it'll be over. So that'll be a positive to recording so late tonight. That's what I'm going to look at.
Utah's made a nice little run here, so they're getting themselves back in the game. Clippers kind of felt like the Clippers were in control for...
Well, I mean, when you miss 17 straight shots from the field, I mean, it's very hard to win a game, and the fact that they're in the game just shows you. And I'm really even depressed that it's the Clippers, but anyways, that's a discussion for later on. All right, before we start, Mike, I do have a quick game. This is a quick one for you. I'm not going to take too terribly long, I don't think. All right? So I have the list of the most wins of any NBA coach in the playoffs. I mean, I think you should be able to come up with at least the top
number. Number one is Phil Jackson.
Okay, I figured you'd get that one. Okay.
Number two is Greg Popovich.
He's actually number three by one game.
All right, well, that's interesting. So, again, I need somebody who has gone on multiple playoff runs, probably has been with multiple teams.
I would agree with both those statements.
Been a coach for a long time. I don't think that it is a coach that is currently in the league.
I agree with that statement.
So let me think.
Let me just put – Phil Jackson has 229 wins. Greg Popovich has 170 wins. Their stats are basically almost identical. His second and third place. Popovich has played two more games in NBA playoffs, and this person has played two less, and they have one more win, though.
Okay. This is a hard one because, honestly, I'm trying to think of multiple title winners, somebody who has had the longevity to be able to sustain this record. My mind keeps coming back to Don Nelson, but Don Nelson never won a title. So
Don Nelson isn't even sniffing. He's 100 wins behind this person.
Man.
I'm going to give you a little hint. He's an executive for a team right now.
He's an executive for a team, man. So that immediately is not jarring me into any type of coherence.
He may not be a big fan of LeBron.
He may not be a big fan of LeBron. Me?
He was at one point.
I have nothing. I don't know if my brain is just fried.
It's Pat Riley, Mike.
Okay, there you go. All right. Yeah, that makes sense. That makes total sense. All right. I totally drew a blank. So I went 2 for 3.
Yeah.
If I'm a baseball player, I'm way ahead in the Hall of Fame.
So I'll do 4, 5, and 6 just because they're all really close. Number 4 is Larry Brown. Number 5 is Red Auerbach. And number 6 is Jerry Sloan. Although Doc Rivers is likely going to be number 4 by the end of this playoff run. If he gets 5 more wins, he's number 4. He's going to jump from 8 to 4 real quick. So if he gets 4 more wins, that's what he has to do. So we'll see. Anything interesting on those, Mike? Are you a little surprised that Auerbach and Auerbach, obviously,
with the number of titles that the Celtics won, you figure that he's probably going to be up there, but I didn't figure him to be in the top 3 simply because, again, you're talking about the lack of the playoff rounds were a lot shorter back in those days. And so you just, even when you won titles, you weren't playing nearly as many games as modern coaches were.
I have to ask you one name, Mike, on this list. All these other names I recognize. Casey Jones.
Casey Jones was a player for the Celtics in the Bill Russell era, and then he also coached the Celtics.
Was he like a player coach, or was he just a straight coach?
He was a straight coach. Casey Jones just passed away within the past year. I think it was within the past year. And he might be in the Hall of Fame as both a coach and a player. So
okay. Well, I feel ignorant that I don't know who that is. But
well, that's all right. I couldn't come up with Pat Riley here at 12:15 in the morning, so yep. It's all good.
All right. So I think that ends what we're going to talk about for now. We will definitely discuss some more interesting facts next week at the beginning of our episode. But first, what we're going to do is we decided, you know, we're in the midst of round 2 at this point, so we're not going to spend a whole lot of time bringing up the end of round 1 since we last recorded. Obviously, a whole bunch of series have ended, but Mike and I decided that it would be more prudent for us to kind of just talk about those 3 teams that were eliminated. You know, when we were recording last week, we kind of knew Memphis was getting eliminated, so we're not going to spend any time there. What we're going to do is we're going to go through the other 3 teams. I think we have to start with the Lakers, Mike. I think that makes the most sense because obviously they were the defending title contenders. Listen, the second that AD tried to play that game and like fell over and he was out, like I knew they were toast. I mean, they were toast anyways. It looked like they were toast. And their problem is they don't have any cap room and I don't know what they're going to do. So I think they're kind of strong to the current situation. You know, I've been seeing all these rumors about Dame, and we're going to talk about Portland in a minute. Oh, Dame's going to go there, and Dame's going to go. I don't think there's any chance that they get another big name there because I just don't see how they make the contract work because Portland's never going to agree. Like I saw someone floating the idea, oh, you know, we can throw Kuzma and KCP for Dame Lillard. Listen, Portland's never going to do that. So I think, you know, these are, once again, this is the whole media market and trying to get things happen. I just don't think there's any chance that they get a big name player Could they upgrade their role players? Maybe. You know, I thought that's what they did. Their roster, top to bottom, arguably should have been better. Montrezl Harrell was basically unplayable. Again in the playoffs, second year in a row. I just don't get it. But anyways, so that's my take on the Lakers, Mike. I don't see how they can make a big move.
Well, if you look backwards, which you just mentioned, and you think about the changes that they made to the roster, and you look at the moves that they made individually, you trade, or again, trade is not really what happened, but you exchange Rondo for Dennis Schroeder. And in a vacuum, Dennis Schroeder is a better player, probably had a better season this season in terms of the regular season than Rondo had last year as a regular season player. And then Schroeder just wasn't what they hoped here during that playoff series. Plus, he was under the COVID protocols at the end of the season. So there are some potential caveats to that. But Schroeder is a free agent. And so what are the Lakers going to do with him? Are they going to offer him a big contract? Is there somebody else out there who thinks Dennis Schroeder is going to be the answer to some question that they have about their roster? I would guess that somebody's probably going to overpay for Dennis Schroeder, whether that's the Lakers or somebody else. Schroeder's a fine player. He does some good things. I think he can help you in certain situations, but there'd be a certain number that, whether I was the Lakers or anybody else, I'm not sure what that number is, but I would have a number in my head that I just would not exceed to have Dennis Schroeder on my roster. Then you think about Harrell. I mean, the Clippers found out last year that he was unplayable in the playoffs against certain matchups. And last year when he tried to go against Jokic, Jokic just tore him up. And then you look at this series and DeAndre Ayton, we can, you know, we've kind of talked a little bit about him here and there, but he's a guy who, to this point, through this playoffs, through the first, whatever, how many games the Suns played, now 7 games, he's been really, really good. I don't have his averages in front of me, but he's got to be averaging close to 18, 19 points a game and probably 13, 14 rebounds in the playoffs. You can get that kind of play out of a center. Now, Phoenix still probably regrets not taking Luka, but DeAndre Ayton is looking pretty solid at this point. We can go back and revisit that draft with when we talk about Trae Young, and you start thinking about Luka, Trae Young, DeAndre Ayton, and then you leave Marvin Bagley at number 2 to Sacramento, and that's starting to look a little Darko-ish as we look forward. It's probably these guys got a long way to go to be LeBron, Dwayne Wade, and Chris Bosh, but it's not looking real good for Marvin Bagley at this point or the Sacramento Kings. Anyway, so back to the Lakers. Harrell ended up doing nothing. Gasol ended up doing next to nothing. The big Andre Drummond signing ended up being completely worthless. And so you look at what their supporting cast did in the playoffs, and they were worse than they were last year, without question. But it also goes to, there's a reason why those guys are role players. And if they're playing off both LeBron and AD, I'm sure they're going to play better. And if they're playing off just bubble LeBron versus just this season's playoff LeBron, bubble LeBron was clearly superior. And whether that was a result of the ankle injury, whether that was a result of the wear and tear of the 2 consecutive back-to-back seasons with very, very little rest, whether that was the result of Father Time beginning to win that battle, I don't know. But LeBron certainly was not as impactful in that Phoenix series as we have seen him be in the past. And who knows what the reason is. But yeah,
he's really been taking it. I don't know if you've seen his tweets and his Instagram posts, but he's been really talking about how people talking about I'm washed. They're just wait till next year or something like that. He tweeted out a Gladiator, are you not entertained thing. I think he's taking this way more personally than I probably would have. I mean, he's kind of got thin skin anyways, but I truly believe that an ankle injury did him in this year. And he was, you know, by the way, we're talking about this guy like he was playing like a bum, but he actually played really well. He played really well.
I mean, he probably averaged, 25 or 26, 7-7 in the series. So,
let's be clear here. A bum that averaged 25, 7-7 in his 18th season in the NBA. I mean, Jesus. Listen, people need to chill out. Like he's just not the same player he was in 2017, 2018. He can't carry a team, especially on a wheel that wasn't 100%. It is what it is. I don't like that people say, oh, he's washed, but he's not obviously the same player. I mean, but once again, I know you like to kind of don't even think about the Jordan years in Washington, but I mean, and he had his moments, but I mean, his numbers weren't great last year.
No, of course. It's a totally it's a totally different animal. Look, age ends up sapping you of some of the things that make you unbelievably special. And LeBron can still continue to play at a very, very high level because he's such a great passer. He can sort of morph into more of a post player. There's lots of things that he can do. He can continue to be effective. He just cannot be the guy who says, I'm putting this inferior roster on my back and carrying that inferior roster to an NBA title.
And I want to be clear, Mike. I think last week or 2 weeks ago, we talked about how, was this team better than the 2018 Cavs? I originally said I felt like it was. I don't think they are. I discount LeBron. Pretend like LeBron is the same player. I think the roster was not constructed in a way that best plays to LeBron's game. I truly believe that. And I think I heard that on Simmons Pod on Sunday or last week or something. But I had really originally thought of that. But you think about it. In 2018, as terrible as the Cavs roster was, it was all guys who created space and spread the floor and could hit shots. They could all hit shots. Would they always go in? No. But would teams have to worry about them making shots? Was there a team that was worried that Kyle Kuzma was going to make a shot in the playoffs when AD went out? The answer is no. Was there someone who thought that Harrell or Schroeder were going to beat them if LeBron went to the line? No, there was no one. So I truly believe, Mike, that the 2018 Cavs roster was better than that roster that they put out there. Marc Gasol was abysmal. Abysmal. Andre Drummond, abysmal. The fact that they were relying on Andre Drummond to get double-doubles because they had no other option, and he was still terrible. Abysmal. I'm just saying, I think the Cavs 2018 roster was better. Do you agree or disagree with my statement on that?
I mean, it's hard to even make the argument because the Lakers roster was put together with the idea that it wasn't just LeBron, it was Anthony Davis. And Anthony Davis obviously opens up even more floor spacing, more possibilities, more variety into what you can do. It also lessens that burden on LeBron. So in the minutes that he does play, he's able to coast more. He can pick his spots a lot better. Instead of just being the guy, again, that's has to do everything and create everything for everyone else. So if you just look at the straight up back of the roster, I guess in theory, if you looked at it on paper and you looked at the names of those players, you might be inclined to say that the Lakers were better man for man. But your argument that the fit maybe was better with the 2018 Cavs, I think is a decent argument. I don't know. I could go either way. I think that you have to just take it with a grain of salt because the Lakers roster was built with the idea that AD was going to be there. And now what we're seeing here is, and this, like you said, was something that when I listened to that Simmons podcast, they talked a little bit about how is there any bit of Anthony Davis that regrets coming to LA and says, look, now I got a potentially aging LeBron and we're all capped out. There's not a whole lot we can do to improve the roster. I mean, maybe. Conversely, if you're LeBron, you're looking at Anthony Davis going, dude, you got to stay healthy. And he certainly hasn't been able to do that this year. And we know that in past years, he hasn't always been able to stay healthy as well. So the Lakers are an interesting spot because I'm not sure what they do. I don't think there's a Damian Lillard trade out there. I've heard some Kyle Lowry rumors that maybe there'd be a way that you could get Kyle Lowry. If you add Kyle Lowry to this mix when he's got another year of mileage on him, does that push you over the top? I mean, the reality is it's just like it is this year. If you get a LeBron who's similar to what you got this year, or maybe he's 2% diminished because he's another year older. And then you get a healthy Anthony Davis, then the Lakers are still going to be right there regardless of what the rest of their roster looks like. I mean, they're going to fill the roster out with whoever. If you have 98% of this season LeBron and you have a fully healthy Anthony Davis, you're going to be right there as an NBA title contender regardless of who else you roll out there. But can you count on either one of those things? Again, we've been saying it all through this spring. I don't think you can count on it. I don't trust that LeBron's going to be able to do that as he continues to age, and I don't trust that Anthony Davis is going to be able to stay healthy for an entire season and all the way through the postseason. You're crossing your fingers. You're crossing your fingers. And what you do with the rest of the roster, I mean, you can try and tweak and do some of the things that they did this year. Sometimes it may work out. Sometimes it may not. But I don't think there's another big move that the Lakers can make to get another star. Because to your point, does anybody want to give up Dame Lillard for – I mean, who's the centerpiece of that trade? Kuzma? I mean, I don't know what the Lakers draft pick situation is. I mean, they sent everything out to get Anthony Davis. So they don't have any picks to trade. And, I mean, I just don't see a pathway for them to be able to really do a whole lot. So I guess the question for the Lakers long term is, what LeBron's got one more year on his contract after next season, where's he look? If they're no closer to winning another title, does he start to look around? Does he become
I'm coming home.
No, okay. That has not happened. Does he just become a one season ring chaser?
Well, I think here's the thing. Bronny is a what? He'll be a sophomore next year.
No, Bronny will be a junior next year, I believe.
Bronny will be a junior next year. So where he's going to go is going to be a one-year deal. Okay, it's going to be a one-year deal. Because if
couldn't you see LeBron every year? I know he wants to play with Bronny. So maybe is Bronny good enough to play in the NBA? I don't think we have any idea at this point. But couldn't you see LeBron just saying every year, just look at who's a title contender? He's got more money than he could ever spend in his entire life and more money than his family can ever spend.
LeBron James, veteran minimum.
Yes. I mean, couldn't you see that where he's just like, I want to play for whatever, pick your team that he thinks is the title contender.
Could
that
he go to Utah?
That has somebody on the team that he likes.
Dwayne Wade's
and
an
he
owner.
Just says, right, he just says, hey, I'm going to Utah. I want to play with Donovan Mitchell and Gobert. And then the next year he's like, hey, all right, you know, that worked out pretty well now. Jamal Murray is going to be back from his ACL tear. I'm going to go play with the Nuggets and play with Jokic. And that would be the most LeBron move that LeBron could make is just when this Lakers contract ends.
You would be so disgusted.
LeBron picks up like four more titles over the course of the end of his career because he just handpicks these championship contenders. He's won a title in eight different cities. I don't know. I wouldn't put it past him. I would not put it past him. Who knows? That'd be interesting. We're 20 minutes in. We've talked 12 minutes of Lakers. So okay. it might be time to move on.
All right. So the next, Portland loses to Denver. You were happy. I was sad. I mean, I'm not sad because Jokic. I enjoy watching Jokic play. Portland, Terry Stotts fired. Are actually not fired. They mutually agreed to part ways. I think he'll get grabbed up somewhere because I think he's a good coach. He just couldn't put him over the top. And a Dame report is that Dame would prefer Jason Kidd to be the coach. I don't necessarily know if that's the report. I don't know if that's accurate. But, I mean, where does Portland go from here? I mean, I think they've got a good foundation. I think they need one more player, and they need healthy players too because people keep getting hurt. I think Dame and CJ are a great combination. The defense is their problem, and they need to get a coach who can preach defense and work on defense. Unless they're going to try to score like the Brooklyn Nets and score 150 a night, you know.
But here's the thing: Dame and CJ are offensive oriented players, and they're never, even if you bring in a different coach who changes the mindset and gets them to focus more on defense, neither one of those two guys is ever going to be a lockdown defender.
Yeah.
And so, you know, they tried to get Robert Covington with two first round picks. They tried to do some things to upgrade the defense, and it didn't really work. And I think you're looking at personnel. To me, it comes down to you have three choices if you're in Portland, and each one is, you know, slightly goes up the scale of audaciousness. So the lowest on the scale is you keep the core of the team together, which basically means Dame, CJ, and probably Nurkic. And then you just try to tweak around. You try to tweak around the edges. I'm saying, you know what I mean? You try to tweak around the edges. Yeah, yeah. You look for some role players. You try to find a guy that can maybe fill and do some of the things that you need them to do. So that's, yeah, there you go. So that's kind of the stand pat, kind of run it back. That's what they've done for the last 5 years, let's say. Number two, you can look to trade CJ McCollum and see what you can get for him. Now, the question is, CJ McCollum's a borderline all-star player. I don't think he's ever made an all-star team, but if you went around the league and said, who are the best players never to make an all-star team, his name is right there in the top two, three, four.
All right, let me propose for you, Mike. I got a trade for you.
Okay.
Colin Sexton and Kevin Love for CJ McCollum.
I don't think if I'm either team, I'm not sure I do that. I don't think either team, if I was either team, I would not be excited about that. If I was Portland, there is no possible way I would ever do that. One, I'm trading a guy who is better than the player I'm getting back. CJ McCollum's a better player than Colin Sexton. They're slightly different.
Well, you get Colin Sexton and Kevin Love.
Okay. But I really don't get Kevin Love. I get Kevin Love's, what does he have, a year or does he have two still?
I think he still has three, Mike.
Nah, he can't have three. I think it's two. So let's just go with the assumption.
I'm going to fact check this. Hold on.
Okay, fact check it.
Go ahead.
All right. So basically I'm inheriting and having to pick up Kevin Love's contract. I'm taking that off the Cavs books. There's no way Portland does that trade because – Kevin Love is, at this point, he's a negative asset rather than a positive asset. He can't stay on the floor. He makes way too much money.
Oh, yeah, he's got two more. I'm sorry, you're right. He's got two more seasons.
All right, well, at least I knew something tonight. Anyway, I just don't think, to me, Kevin Love is an asset that somebody should be, the Cavs should have to pay somebody to take Kevin Love at this point, as opposed to Kevin Love being thought of as, oh, we're getting back Kevin Love for CJ McCollum. I don't see that trade having an upside for Portland. And on the Cavs side of it, you're essentially trading a younger guy in Sexton for an older guy who does a lot of the same things. Now, he's better. McCollum's better than Colin Sexton. But, I mean, to what end? And you get off of Love's contract, I guess, so that's a positive. But the Cavs aren't ready to contend or really do anything anyway unless they win the lottery. I mean, unless you get the best player in this upcoming draft – and maybe you don't have to get it at number one because everybody seems to think it's a five-player draft. And so we all know that even though we say it's a five-player draft, that there's going to be variations in who those guys are. And maybe the fourth best guy, maybe the fourth pick will be the best guy. So it doesn't necessarily matter what the order is. I'd like to have the first pick so I could make the decision about who I think is the best if I'm the Cavs. But if they get the number one player in this draft, then maybe you can start to think about, all right, now we got a team to build around and now we can look at maybe a trade like that. But short of that, I mean, I just don't see why the Cavs would do that.
Okay. Listen, I was just throwing it out there. I don't know.
No, it's fair. The CJ trade thing, though, is that's sort of the middle ground of Dame's our franchise player. We got to find pieces that fit better to complement what he does. He's never going to be a great defender. We need somebody who is a versatile two-way player. And there's just not a lot of players like that out there that are good enough to be compared to CJ McCollum that you can get. There just isn't that many of those guys out there. And I don't know. I think it's going to be hard to go that route. What were you going to say about this piece? And then we can move on to the third option.
I don't have anything to say.
All right, the third option is you trade Dame. The third option is you trade Dame. And you just say, look, we've had a good run. Maybe Dame says it to them. Maybe they say it to him. Hard to believe that Portland would voluntarily trade him. But at the same time, you know, you've gotten to one Western Conference Finals with him. You gotten bounced in the first round multiple times. What are we doing here? Look, Lillard's been a franchise icon. He's a guy who has wanted to fight through, and you know, equate him a little bit to Giannis saying, hey, I want to break through the wall. I don't want to go around it, which maybe he just needs to stop adding bricks to the wall. But I just, if you're Portland, you have to at least think about it and look around the league and say, is there anybody out there that you could potentially get 90 cents on the dollar for Dame? I probably not. I don't think that's not the option they're going to choose. I think they're going to choose between option one or option two. And I think they're going to go to option one. I mean, I think they're going to keep those guys together and just try to tweak around the margins. Cause I don't think there's a CJ trade out there where you can get anything close to
They can talk themselves into doing one more year of it with a new coach and see if anything different happens. And then after that, I think that's when you're going to see the trade. Honestly, I think they're going to give the new coach 1 year, and then go from there. That's what
that could be true. That could be true.
All right, let's talk about the last team that we need to talk about, and that's the Mavericks. It ended up turning into they needed too much from Luka, and Luka played unbelievable. He played out of his mind. I think he averaged like 38 points a game in this series, Mike. 37 points, something like that. Yep. He played really, really well. Just wasn't enough. The role players didn't step up for them. I'm really sad. They were my pick in the Western Conference after the first two games against the Clippers. I guess I Mavericks fan, if you want to blame me, you can blame me. Go for it. I apologize. I don't know where the Mavs go either. I think they need another player, but I don't know. And, you know, I'm not very good at the cap situation here. Let's look. While I'm doing that, I'll let you talk, and then I'll tell you how much the cap situation is for the Mavericks.
All right, so first on the Luka thing, he was tremendous. He was fantastic. Role players obviously played well during their three wins and then not so much in their four losses. You got to be able to knock down shots when you're playing around someone like Luka. I do think that similar to LeBron, I think it's difficult, similar to James Harden a little bit in Houston. I think it's difficult to be a role player when you play with LeBron or you play with Harden or you play with Luka, because they have the ball in their hands so much and they're doing so much. And you're basically a lot of times just standing there waiting for them to finish doing what they're doing and then either score and you just watch, or they kick it out to you and you got to be ready to knock in that shot even though you may not have touched the ball for the last 3 minutes. So I think that's tough and it takes a special kind of player. Porzingis is their number two, theoretically, making 30-some million. I think he's got at least 1 year left on that deal, maybe two. And I mean, unless you get back to the Porzingis that was healthy in New York, that guy maybe is a great fit next to Luka. The guy that he is now, the shell of his former self, I mean, he's a piece. He's fine. But you're paying him $32 million to be your second best player. And he's just not. I mean, he's just not. That's not who he is right now. Maybe he can get back there. But history would tell you that big men who get injured tend to continue to go down that injury path as opposed to suddenly recovering and being more resilient and being able to stay on the floor. So is there a Porzingis trade out there? I mean, there's probably some other bad contracts that somebody makes $31 million, but you're not upgrading your talent by getting rid of Porzingis and bringing in some other guy who's making more money than what he's probably worth, because that's all you're going to be able to get for Porzingis. So I think Dallas, you have to look at what kind of team do we want to build around Luka? Do we want to build a team that is exclusively Luka and then specialists and role players around him? Or could we find another guy to share the burden with Luka? And then does he have the desire at this point at age 22 or 23, whatever he is, does he have the desire right now to give the ball up to a secondary playmaker, a guy who's maybe an all-star player, but not as good as him. How does that look in terms of fit and how it goes? And look, eventually, when Luka's 28, 29, and he starts to completely figure out what he can and can't do on a basketball floor and what he needs help with, think back to early Michael Jordan. Everybody said, you can't win with this guy. He doesn't make his teammates better. And I would guess that there's probably some truth to that, in that he played a certain way as a rookie, as a first year, you know, as a second year player, as a third year player. He played differently than he did when he was a 10-year veteran who had won multiple championships, because he started to realize, look, I have to be able to utilize my teammates. And that doesn't mean that he didn't dominate the ball. It didn't mean that he didn't take every big shot in big moments. It didn't mean that he had the ball in his hands and made the decision to pass to Paxson or pass to Steve Kerr. You know, that, I think it's just, when you're talking about Luka, eventually you have to figure it out that you can't do it on your own. But with this team, he had to do it on his own, and he very nearly did. And he just didn't get enough support in those games. And look, a couple guys that I've continuously bashed on the podcast, Marcus Morris goes 7-for-9 from three. I mean, you talk about an anomaly.
So you're saying it's not all my fault?
No, it's not all your fault. Marcus Morris shoots 7-of-9 from three. When that happens, I mean, you're just not beating the you're not beating the Clippers when Marcus Morris is knocking in 7 threes. Reggie Jackson played out of his mind those last two games, shooting the ball. Lots of good decisions.
Because he was the answer.
He was the answer. He was the answer. He was the answer to how do you beat Dallas in the first round. So the Clippers, I give them credit. I give them credit. They could have easily rolled over. I think the Luka injury opened the door the same way the Draymond Green nut punch opened the door for the Cavs and the 3-1
Speaking
comeback.
Speaking of which, I'm just kidding. Sorry. Go ahead.
But but you know what I'm saying, that opened the door, that Luka injury opened the door for the Clippers to win those home games or win those road games in Dallas. And I think if Luka doesn't get hurt, the Clipper tailspin was certainly possible, but it happened. It allowed the Clippers to kind of right themselves, steady themselves, and they were able to fight through it. And obviously, Kawhi was just incredible. So I don't know what the Mavericks do. I think long term, and I don't know if long term is 3 years from now, 5 years from now, next year, they've got to get a guy who he has to have a running mate. He's got to have somebody better. There's a big gap between how good Luka is and their second best player. That gap has to be narrowed by whoever they bring in. And I know they have lots of cap issues. Did you find out exactly what their cap looks like?
They're in the negative, so they can't do anything unless they make a trade. And like I said, like you said, I don't see there's any way that anyone. I mean, it's not like you're going to upgrade your talent from Porzingis because it's a bad contract. I mean, like there's no way they would do this, but like you have to find like a Kevin Love situation for that to even happen, right? I mean, they're not going to trade Kevin Love. They're not going to trade Porzingis for Kevin Love, because I think we can agree that Porzingis would be the better player right now and would definitely probably fit better than Luka, right? Or that fit better with Luka.
Yeah, seemingly. The gaps. I mean, if they're both on the floor and relatively healthy for their current state, the gap's probably not that ridiculously huge between Porzingis and Kevin Love. But that's not moving the needle for you. So I don't know who is. You want to trade Porzingis for Russell Westbrook? I think the answer is no.
No.
I mean, do you want to trade him? Did Lowry? I don't know if Lowry signed an extension. Did Lowry's extension kick into this year, where he's making $30 million? You know, Do you want to trade him for Kyle Lowry? If Kyle Lowry's just playing off the ball and the ball's in Luka's hands, is that the best use of Kyle Lowry? I don't know the answer to that. But you're not getting an A-list star with Porzingis as the centerpiece. I just don't see it. So I don't know where the Mavs go. But eventually, long term, I know where they have to go. They got to get a second guy in there that can alleviate some of the playmaking burden and the scoring burden from Luka, so that he doesn't have to create everything that his team does. Now, I know he's good at it. I know that it makes a ton of sense. The same way it made a ton of sense for Harden to do it in Houston, but there's a reason why the Houston Rockets and James Harden didn't win, and it goes beyond Harden's fragility with his mental toughness and ability to come through in big moments. I just think that you get tired, you get worn down. It's predictable, and it's hard to play in that system if you're one of those other guys, because all you do is stand there, and then when you do finally get your chance, you might not have touched the ball for the last four possessions, and suddenly your ball's being swung to you, and you got to knock down an open three. That's hard to do. Anybody who's played basketball knows that is hard to do.
Well, I knew that tonight, Mike. I played tonight, and I had two really good games, and then we have 15 people. We had to sit out for a game, and I was feeling it, and then I got back in the game, and let's just say
the feeling was gone.
The feeling was gone, and it took another game in order to get the feeling back. So, oh well, life goes on.
Yeah, I understood.
All right, so on that note, we're going to transfer into round two, 39 minutes into the podcast. We're going to transfer into round two and kind of talk about our early impressions about what's been happening in this. In round two, but before we do that, we're going to take a word from our sponsors.
Hey, coaches, parents, and group leaders. I want to introduce you to our newest sponsor, SnapRaise. SnapRaise is the nation's largest digital donation platform built to help teams, youth groups, and clubs raise money quickly and efficiently without selling products. SnapRaise builds your group a customizable campaign website, and students use their mobile devices to connect and engage with their biggest fans. My son's high school team used SnapRaise this season, and our team raised all the money they needed to fund their season, and then some. Getting SnapRaise started is quick and free. Just visit SnapRaise.com, and you'll get connected to a local SnapRaise expert in no time.
Hey, hoopheads, we all hate ankle sprains, and they happen way too often. Ankle injuries are the number one sports-related injury. Arise is trying to change that. With the iFast, your athletes get preventative protection and full mobility. Athletes no longer need to wear bulky braces that limit performance and give mediocre protection. Anyone playing sports should be using these products. Keep your athletes in the game. Don't wait for them to get hurt to take action. Visit www.arise.com/teampricing to learn more. That's ARYSE.com.
All right, we're back to talk about the second round series between, some good teams, some teams we don't know what's going to happen with them. We're going to start with the Eastern Conference because those are both through two games. And we're going to start with the series that I thought was going to be a good series. I especially thought it was going to be a good series after James Harden gets injured. But the Brooklyn Nets up 2-0 on Milwaukee. And Mike, you, in full transparency, you and I have been texting a lot about this series so far. Obviously, the Brooklyn Nets are making everything. KD is playing out of his mind. Kyrie's playing out of his mind. Joe Harris played well. The big one is Blake Griffin is playing really, really well. And Milwaukee's just not making anything. This series not over yet by any stretch of the imagination. I do think that there's zero chance that this is a sweep. But I think there's still a chance for Milwaukee here. They're not out of it. But I'm going to tell you right now, they need to win both these games. Because if they go back to Brooklyn, there's a very good chance they're going to go up. Brooklyn's going to win at home, and then it's going to be trouble. And, you know, maybe we make the argument that it would be good for Milwaukee to lose because Budenholzer would get fired. I don't know if we want to go that far, but I know you're not going to go that far because you have picked them forever, much like I've picked Brooklyn forever. But I just think the fact that they can't even stop them now and Harden's not playing, that tells me right there that they're too dainty, that they've got no answers. And I know that Brooklyn can't guard them, but they're not making their shots. And we've seen this song and dance from the Brooklyn, from the Milwaukee Bucks before. So I just don't have any faith that they're going to turn it around. Your take, Mike.
All right. I have I have a bunch of takes on this series, and I'm going to try not to dive into too much detail on any of them because I think a lot of them are sort of self-explanatory. So the first one is I told you and I told a couple other people after game one of that series, I felt like Milwaukee, even though Brooklyn won that game pretty easily, I felt like Milwaukee could have walked out of that arena feeling like, hey, man, if we just knock in some shots, we can win this game. Because it felt like they could get pretty much any shot that they wanted. They missed open threes. They didn't shoot the ball well. And it didn't feel like Brooklyn stopped them. It just felt like they didn't get the shot themselves. They stopped themselves. They just didn't make shots. And it felt like, hey, if we go into game two and they play exactly the same way and their shooting reverts to the mean, they're going to be right where they want to be and probably come out of Brooklyn with a split. So that's how I felt after game one. After game two, the feeling's a little bit different. And it's a little bit different because there were some things that have sort of been disturbing that have been questions that we've talked about before on the podcast. So one question is Chris Middleton good enough to be your number two? Now, he went through a stretch in game two. I think it started in where he made like six or seven straight shots in a row. But at that point, Milwaukee was already down 20 and he had started 0 for 8. And I like Middleton. I like what he does. But I'm not 100% sure that he's the guy to be the number two. Now, you bring in Jrue Holiday, who maybe Middleton is now 2A and Holiday is 2B, or Holiday's 2A and Middleton's 2B. I don't know the answer to that. But Middleton has got to be at his best for them to have any chance. I mean, if he plays below what he's capable of playing, Milwaukee has absolutely no chance to be able to win because he's got to be able to make jump shots. He's got to be able to do some creation because Giannis right now, I mean, I saw something on Twitter today. Somebody said, I think we're going to remember these two Giannis MVPs the way we remember the Karl Malone MVP. And now you're getting into some pretty dangerous territory when you start comparing what Giannis has done to this point with what Karl Malone did back in his career. I'm concerned about Giannis because the free throw shooting it's becoming a problem. We talked about it earlier in the season where he started out really bad and then he went on a nice stretch where he was getting close to 75% for the second half of the season. You're like, all right, maybe he's starting to figure this thing out. And we said, if he can shoot 75% from the line, it becomes a huge, huge plus for Milwaukee. Because now, when he goes to the basket, teams can't follow him. Because you know he's going to step up to the line and he's at least going to make one and 75%. Every other time he's going to make two out of two and whatever. We know the percentages. But now, I mean, he goes up there, and it's funny because if you've ever played and you watch guys when they go up to the line, like you can tell the dudes that are just like, hey, man, this is going in. Like there's no doubt. Like you can just see the confidence just brimming in their eyes. And then you see a guy who's struggling like Giannis, and he gets up there and he does that pre-free throw mimicking his shot routine. And as he's doing that, you just look at his face and his eyes and he's just, it's almost like he's looking around going, oh God, I hope this goes in. Please let this go in. This has to somehow go in. And even right after the whistle blows.
He's got the yips right now.
Even when he gets fouled, like right away when they zoom in on his face, you can just tell he's like, oh no, I got to go to the free throw line. And that is not a good place to be. It is not a good place to be, especially when you're your team's best player and when your best skill is taking the ball to the basket and dominating in the paint. Like we're approaching Shaq level poor foul shooting where, I mean, do you want Giannis to have the ball in the last 2 minutes at this point when he's going to shoot whatever, 25% from the line? I mean, it's bad. We forgot to mention that with Luka too. Like that's a concern, and maybe that's just injury related.
Yeah, well, Luka's regular season numbers weren't terrible, right?
Right, but Luka has to become, if Luka wants to be, if he wants to be an all-time best player, he's going to have to figure that out. Like, he's going to have to become an 80% foul shooter. He just is. I mean, because the way he plays, his style of being physical in the lane, and he's not necessarily blowing by guys with his first step, but what he's doing is he's creating an advantage, and then he uses his strength, and that's going to allow him to get into the paint and finish and make free throws, and he's got to be able to make free throws. So Giannis, that's a problem. It's a problem because once you start thinking about it, you start becoming tentative because you're like, oh, I don't want to go to the hole strong because I don't want to get fouled. And every time he takes a three now, I just cringe. I'm like, what is he doing? Like, why? I don't want to mimic Charles Barkley here, but Barkley keeps saying, why are they taking all these threes? And I know during the regular season, they made them. They buried Miami with the big, huge barrage of threes in the second quarter. It all looks great when it goes in, but when it's not, and it's not your night, like, you got to be able to figure something else out. And part of that is you got to go inside and you got to get to the line. And when you're not confident as, in this case, the team's best player, I mean, that's a problem. So the Giannis free throw shooting is a problem. Kevin Durant, I texted you. I'm like, when that guy shoots, I feel like he's never going to miss. He's terrible to root against. He might be the worst guy in the league to watch as somebody on the opposing team from a team that you're rooting for. Because I just feel like he's never going to miss. And I know he does, but it feels like every time that guy rises up that the ball's going in the basket. And that's a tough, tough spot to be. Does Milwaukee still have a chance? I mean, they still have a chance, but they better win game three and come out with a crazy effort, a crazy amount of enthusiasm. They got to do everything in their power to win that game and win it convincingly so that they can kind of shift their mentality back to, hey, this is a winnable series. And look, they've lost two road games. Teams have lost two road games and come back in one series. But there's just some things that are a little bit disconcerting. Yeah, that are a little bit disconcerting. The Middleton thing is disconcerting, and the Giannis free throw shooting, to me, are the two things that stand out. And obviously, the Nets role players have played fantastic. I mean, if Blake Griffin is going to continue to play the way he has, it makes a huge difference. If Mike James is going to come off the scrap heap and get 12 or 14 points in a game, you're probably just going to end up tipping your cap to Brooklyn and watching them move on to the Eastern Conference Finals. So, I don't know. I'm not all that encouraged. I felt way better about this series before it tipped off. I felt better about it before, or I should say right after game one. Game two was like a gut punch where, ooh, I'm not quite so sure anymore.
Yep. All right. Move to the other team, the other game in the East, the other series in the East. We've got the Hawks and we've got the Sixers. We are tied at one after tonight's game. The Sixers won, although they tried to blow it, but then they all of a sudden came back out and
what's the name really, of this really game? You know what the name of this game is going to be in Philly, right? If Philly somehow goes and wins
Embiid
the title.
Game. It's the Embiid game.
No, it's not.
What is it?
It's the Shake Milton game.
Oh, Shake Milton in the third and the fourth quarter. Yeah,
the end of the third, beginning of the fourth, where it was 88. It was 88-84.
Yep, it was very precarious. Very precarious.
Right, 88-84. Philly. I know that Atlanta had kind of clawed their way back, and then Philly was starting to, I guess, get a little bit more control of the game there. And then at the buzzer of the third quarter, Shake Milton hits the three, and then he comes out beginning of the fourth quarter, and I think he hit two more.
When I started to watch it, Mike. To watch it, and I was like, oh, this is going to be good. I can watch it. You know, I can listen to it and watch it. And then the next thing I knew, it went from a four-point game to a 15-point game. I was like, oh, it's over.
Yeah, it was over. That game was over in a blink of an eye because, like I said, it felt like – and honestly, I didn't turn that game on tonight until – about midway through the third quarter. And midway through the third quarter, Atlanta was clawing their way back from a 10-point deficit. And they got it all the way. I think – I'm pretty sure they might have tied it. And then Philly pushed ahead a little bit. But then Atlanta got – I think when it was 88-84, Atlanta had just scored maybe two baskets in a row. And it looked like everything – you know, they were going to have some momentum going in the fourth quarter. And then Milton hits that three. And then it just steamrolls from there in the fourth quarter. But, yeah, Embiid had 40. He was fantastic. Atlanta's been way better than – I think you or I would have thought, and probably the way most anybody would have thought. Trae Young's been – he wasn't as good tonight as he's been. Probably his worst game of the playoffs. But he's been a guy who has shown that he's going to be there for big moments, and he's not going to allow you – he's not going to make mistakes that you're going to have to beat him, because he's going to make shots. He's going to make good decisions. And – look, I was not very high on Atlanta coming into the playoffs. I thought they would beat the Knicks, but I didn't think they'd be able to hang with Philly. And it certainly looks like we're in for a long series here, heading back to Atlanta 1-1. You would think, worst-case scenario, Atlanta gets a split, and now we're at 2-2, and so you're looking at least a six-game series. So this series has already probably been more competitive than I think you and I would have thought if we went back 3 weeks ago before the playoffs started. I would have told you, well, they beat the Knicks, they squeak by New York, and then they go into Philly, and that's just a destruction, and they probably don't even get a game. And they have proven that they are much, much better than that. And Trae Young's been it's been a revelation. And like we talked about earlier with this draft, like, it's still a mistake to draft Trae Young over Luka or to make that trade. It's still a mistake. But the success that Trae Young has had, obviously in the regular season, and then now – him being able to show this in the playoffs, it may end up being that, look, we didn't get the number one prize in this draft, but we got a pretty good consolation prize of a guy who, maybe if we put the right team around him, can lead us to a title. And then you think Ayton's in that draft too as the number one overall pick. And, you know, there were a lot of people that still said, hey, look, no matter how good Ayton is, he's not going to be as good as Luka. But they decided to draft the center, and Ayton's probably been better in this short seven games of Phoenix playoff runs than he has been at any point in his career. So you have to be encouraged, because I think Ayton's only – he came in the league at 19. This is what, his third year. So he's like 22 years old. He's going to be really, really good. Now, is he going to be a franchise, I'm putting you on my back and carrying you to titles kind of guy? Probably not. But can DeAndre Ayton – I mean, he's probably already this year going to be the third best player on a championship team. Eventually, could he get to be the second best player on a championship team? I think he can. I think the potential's there for sure. So, I mean, we'll see.
Yep. All right, let's shift to the Western Conference. Do you want to pick the two series? Let's pick the two series. You think Milwaukee's still going to win, or are you thinking Brooklyn now, Mike? Are you going to stick with it, or are you going to reverse course?
So my analytical mind, if I was just looking at the analytics and thinking about what I said earlier, I think you have to be crazy at this point to think that Milwaukee can come back and win four out of the next five, looking at what they have in front of them and looking at the way that they've played in these first two games. That being said, I've been with Milwaukee all year, and – until they're out, I'm just going to continue to stick with them and say that, look, I think they can do it. But in my heart of hearts, do I see that happening? The answer to that is no.
No. Okay.
They better play a good first quarter, first half in game three tomorrow night. Because if they don't, they might get steamrolled 4-0. They really might.
All right, I have Brooklyn, and I have the Sixers coming out of that series.
You think Embiid stays healthy for the rest of the series?
That's not the question.
If you're picking Philly, then you got to think Embiid's going to be playing.
Yeah, I think he's going to be playing.
Without Embiid, Atlanta wins the series.
I'm sticking with Philly and Brooklyn.
I think Philly's going to win it too.
All right, okay, let's shift to the West, and we're going to move quickly. They've only played one game. Both series are one game done. Phoenix ended up winning last night over Denver. Denver looked really, really good And then in the fourth quarter, they just completely fell off. Congrats to Jokic, by the way. He won the. They announced that he won the MVP. Mike, the you see the thing floating around Twitter? It said, "Congrats to the guy who was drafted when they were doing a Taco Bell commercial."
I did not see that, but that's good.
Yeah, I'll see if I can find it. Do you know what pick he was?
He was in the 40s, I believe.
41. Yeah. 41. He's got to be the. I mean, I don't know. He's got to be the one of the highest, if not the highest, or the furthest down draft pick to win an MVP. He's got to be one of, like, right?
I can't think of anybody else that would be that low. He's got to be number one.
I'm gonna send you the. I'm gonna see if I can find this. Jokic Taco Bell. It says Nikola Jokic was picked for 41st during a Taco Bell commercial. Now he's an MVP. That's pretty good. Anyways, I think this series is going to be good. It's interesting. Game one, especially, this is the other thing is, you know, we're so used to watching like LeBron or, you know, play a methodical first game and not know, you know, they've just kind of feel it out. These teams are very unknown quantities, in my opinion. And, you know, we know what they are, but we also don't know who's going to step up for each team because these are just teams that aren't in the West that haven't been in the finals. I mean, look at the finals. The last year was the Lakers. Before that, it was the Warriors for what, 5 straight years. And then going further back, you know, none of those other teams are the same. So like the Western Conference, lots of unknowns here, lots and lots and lots of unknowns. I will say Phoenix looks really good, Mike, and I would not want to play them right now. And, you know, I go back to what I picked them for like a week, and then they looked bad against the Cavs, and I said, I can't pick Phoenix. What am I thinking? Like, I can't do that. Phoenix looked really, really good yesterday, especially in that fourth quarter. Devin Booker is a really good player. Chris Paul, if he stays healthy, is going to be huge. Like you mentioned, Ayton, really good. So I think this is going to be a good series. I think it's going to go 6 games, and I'm going to pick Phoenix. I'm assuming you're going to go Denver, but I'm going to take Phoenix. Go ahead, Mike.
Yeah, I'm still going to pick Denver. I do think that the Suns, as I said earlier, have been impressive. And you look at their roster and you think about some of the defensive versatility that they have, and they got some pretty good wing defenders when you talk about Crowder and Bridges. You can even talk about Torrey Craig coming off the bench, who Milwaukee had for a while and couldn't really figure out how to utilize this season. And so I think they just outright cut him. And then Phoenix picked him up. But we know Chris Paul is a good defender. Booker can be a good defender. Ayton has been a good defender this season and on into the playoffs. Jokic is still a handful, and he's going to get his, and he's going to do what he does. But Phoenix is good. I mean, Phoenix is better than I think you and I were probably willing to admit 6 or 8 weeks ago. But that being said, if Anthony Davis is healthy, they probably get bounced out in the first round. And now they could be looking at a trip to the NBA Finals. I mean, there's a couple of things that come out of this series for me and or this playoffs to this point. One, Trae Young's proved himself to be a player. DeAndre Ayton has proved himself to be a player. And Luka Doncic obviously proved himself to be a player. That draft, as we said earlier, very, very interesting, and it'll be fun to follow those guys' career and continue to kind of compare and contrast what they all end up doing. And then throw our guy Marvin Bagley in there, and that looks even more like a disaster.
Ludicrous, yeah.
Every single minute. And look, the draft is a crapshoot, and whatever, it is what it is, but it was very Sacramento-y of Sacramento to be the team that drafted Marvin Bagley. So Phoenix is versatile. Denver, their role players are going to have to play better. Jokic is going to have to play at an unbelievable level. He was good in game one, but he wasn't unbelievable in game one. And I think for them to win, he's going to have to play at a very, very, very high level, because their other players, without Jamal Murray, it's tough, because you don't have another guy. Like, I like what Michael Porter Jr. has done and what he's become. I was kind of, anybody who's listened to us over the years, knows that I was kind of a little bit down on him last year. I'm like, this guy doesn't even, I mean, even when he tries to throw a pass, he doesn't look like he's ever done it before. But he's kind of figured out what his role is. But he's still not a dynamic, put the ball on the floor, go get a bucket, dynamic one-on-one creator. He's just not that kind of player. And without Murray, it really comes down to, can Jokic just cook the guy that he's guarding and either get himself a shot or set somebody else up? And then you got some the ball moving around the perimeter, and maybe you get a drive off a closeout, and you know you're able to spring some shooters, and guys got to knock down shots. I mean, what we're seeing in these playoffs, in all honesty, I mean, you hear the phrase, it's a make or miss league. But when you're shooting, when every team is shooting between 30 and 40 threes a game, you know, if you shoot 40% in a given game, you're probably going to win that game.
Yep.
And conversely, if you shoot 20% in a given game, you're probably going to lose that game, regardless of all the other elements that go into it. That the ability to knock down threes is just a huge determinant in who ends up winning and losing these series and winning and losing these games. Because the other piece of that is, if you don't make them, then the defense doesn't honor you as much. And now they can close off driving lanes. They say, sure, go ahead and kick it out. Go ahead and kick it out to Chris Middleton. We'll give him an extra half second to get his shot off because we don't think he's going to make it. And sometimes you're right and sometimes you're wrong. And I guess if you're right more than you're wrong when you're the defensive team, that they're not going to be able to make them, then you win. And conversely, if you're an offensive team and you make a higher percentage than your opponent or than you're what you're used to, you're probably going to win that game. So this series is probably going to go – I'd say this series is probably going to go seven. I still think Denver wins it. But, I mean, Phoenix is good. Phoenix is better than I would have wanted to admit 6 weeks ago. I know I said they – you know, if they're a number two, I asked the question, were they a fraudulent number two? And I think they've answered the bell that they're not. But like I said, the caveat is they're down 2-1 to the Lakers. And if Anthony Davis doesn't go down, I'm not so sure that they come back and beat LA. So.
All right, moving to the last series. Utah Clippers just wrapped up. Great game, great finish. Rudy Gobert got the game sealing block to finish. Utah came back. They were down 17 at one point in the first half. Pandemic P struck again. 4 of 17 from the field, 20 points. He was 9 of 10 from the free throw line, but that doesn't excuse a shooting 23% from the field. Donovan Mitchell, unbelievable, 45 points. I didn't even realize, Mike, I'm sitting here watching it while we're talking. I didn't even realize Mike Conley didn't play tonight. Is he hurt? What did he do? Is he hurt again?
Hamstring. So I saw that today. I didn't realize that. I guess he strained it a little bit in the last game against Memphis. And then I saw it came out today that, yeah, he had a strained hamstring. So that's why he didn't play. Mitchell was fantastic tonight. And you think back to his duel with Jamal Murray last year in the first round where they each had multiple 50-point games, and tonight he goes for 45.
So I got a fun stat really for you, Mike.
If he plays that way, and not that he has to get 45 every night, but if he can be the guy, and he can be the guy that you can really go to and that he's going to get you buckets night after night after night consistently in the playoffs, then Utah, that raises Utah's ceiling to, I mean, they can win a title if Donovan Mitchell's going to be playing at his absolute apex.
I got a fun one for you. ESPN Stats and Info. Donovan Mitchell recorded his fourth career 40-point playoff game in Game 1 versus the Clippers, tying Karl Malone for the most 40-point playoff games in Jazz history. That was Mitchell's 28th playoff game. Malone scored 40 points, his fourth 40-point game, in his 149th playoff game for the Jazz.
Yeah, well, you saw the tweet that was floating around about Luka's, how many 40-point games Luka has. So I think Luka has 5 now.
Yeah.
And they also attach like the list of players that don't have that many 40-point games. And it's basically like 90% of the superstars in the NBA. And, you know, you're talking about guys that have played triple digits in playoff games that are nowhere near approaching what Luka's been able to do. And part of it is the era. The scoring is way, way up compared to what it was even 5 years ago, 10 years ago, certainly 20 years ago. The teams, those old Knicks and Heat teams, wouldn't even recognize the floor spacing and the balance and all the things that guys get to play in today as far as offensive basketball and what they're not subjected to on the defensive end of the floor. But I mean, it's just when you think about where we are with this playoffs and you think about what Donovan Mitchell did here for Utah tonight, I mean, if he plays that way, Utah can absolutely get to the NBA Finals if Donovan Mitchell is going to play to that level when he's needed.
Yep. All right, I'm picking Utah because I don't like Clippers.
I'm going to pick Utah too. Winning game one, I think this was a big game for Utah. It's a big game for their confidence.
Yep.
You got to take advantage of the Clippers coming off an emotional series, you know, only a day ago. And we know that all throughout the season, Kawhi's load managing and whatever else he's doing, taking days off. And at this point in the season, he's just not able to do that. It's not like he's coming in and they're doing a 3-hour practice in between games. I mean, he's getting treatment and resting and all those things, but nonetheless, I think that they had to take advantage of tonight. That was an important win for Utah to take care of business. And the fact that they got it done in really businessman-like fashion, and that, you know, they just said, hey, we're going to buckle down. We're going to do what we need to do. And Mitchell comes up big. Utah's sitting in a good spot. I think I'm going to pick Utah as well. And I'll go Utah in 7.
I'm going to go Utah in 6.
Okay.
All right. So I'm assuming you're going unchanged. You're going to stick with Nuggets, Bucks, right? Because that's what you've been riding, so you're going to stay the same. Accurate or inaccurate?
I mean, I've said over and over again that the confidence index in this pick, even when I first made it, where we didn't have some of the issues that have been raised and each team was down in their series, I still had doubts. I have a lot more doubts today than I did a week ago, and certainly more than I had 2 weeks ago. But I think Denver still has a decent shot to beat Phoenix, and I don't think they're going to be outmatched if they were going to play the Clippers or Utah. I mean, I don't think any of those teams out in the West, if any of them win, I don't think any of us are going to be surprised which of those teams represents the Western Conference. I think they're all good. So, yeah, I'm going to stick with Denver in the West, and I don't feel good at all about Milwaukee, but until I at least see them play a home game in this series, I'm going to stick with Milwaukee. But if they don't play well in the first half of game 3,
you're jumping ship.
It could be lights out. It could be lights out real quick, and it might be time for me to jump ship. I don't know if I'd jump ship to
come
Brooklyn. Even if I thought Brooklyn might win, I might just have to pick the Philly Atlanta winner as my Eastern Conference representative.
Anyways, I'm going for Brooklyn, and I'm gonna take Utah, Mike. I think I gotta go Utah, just because, like you said, Phoenix. I think Phoenix wins the series, but I think there's a higher likelihood that Phoenix loses to Denver. than Utah loses to the Nuggets. So I'm gonna take Utah because I think that I feel comfortable with Utah getting to the Western Conference Finals. So that's what I'm gonna go there. So I'm sticking with Brooklyn. I'm going with Utah now. All right.
That's fine. Nobody can argue with, I don't think, any of the four teams in the West. I think you can probably still argue. You could probably still argue against Atlanta. I mean, you can argue against all these teams. So I guess if Atlanta showed up in the NBA Finals, I'd be surprised. But I wouldn't be that surprised after what I've seen to this point. Yep. You know, I mean, I wouldn't be that surprised. So, all right. Is there anything else that we need to hit on?
No, I think we're good, Mike.
It is now 1:16 a.m. So we have definitely gone above and beyond the call of duty here. Just want to thank everybody for continuing to tune in for our NBA episodes. I know that I really enjoy just getting on here and being able to talk some hoops with Jason and share that with you. Coming up, we have some really good interview shows that we're going to be posting. If you didn't get a chance to listen to Mondays, we had Todd Kowalczyk from the University of Toledo, the men's basketball head coach there. on Friday. To be honest with you, Jay, I think we're probably going to put out the mentality episode with Dwayne Killings. And we had UConn assistant coach Kamani Young. Dwayne and Kamani have been friends for a long time, and they got on. It was a very interesting
basketball. And we took video. Are we going to use the video, Mike?
We are going to use the video. We will put the video up on YouTube, so we'll have that. I've actually put a couple of the recent podcasts that we did. The one I did with Jeff Bowles from OU has a Zoom video, and the one we did with Todd Kowalczyk from Toledo that we put up Monday, that one also has a Zoom video element. So for some reason, you're interested in staring at my ugly mug while you're listening to the podcast, you can actually do that now on Zoom. And last night we recorded that on Zoom, and we talked some NBA. So we not only talked college basketball, we talked a lot about their relationship and just how they've been able to support one another as they've gone on through their coaching career. It was really interesting. There's a lot of interesting conversation, a lot of things that coaches can pick up on and learn from. And then we talked some NBA and some college basketball, just fandom at the end of the podcast. So make sure you check that one out. That's going to go up on late Thursday night into Friday. And we have some other really great guests that we've recorded with recently, and those shows will be coming out very soon. We appreciate you sticking with us all the way through this. And so far, it's been interesting in the second round. I'm sure it'll continue to be interesting. No matter what happens, I think we're going to end up with an NBA Finals that we're going to look at and at least be like, huh, because we're going to get some new blood and some different teams, and it's going to be fun to watch. So please stick with us. Please continue to listen to what we're doing here on the Hoopheads Pod and all across the Hoopheads Pod Network. And to everyone out there, thanks for listening, and we will catch you on our next episode. Thanks.
Thanks for listening to the Hoopheads Podcast, presented by Head Start Basketball.